Sorry, I have a question.
Excellent. Really. 17 participants. So welcome, everybody. Today, it's a pleasure to have with us Barbara Catinella. A few words about her life. She studied in physics in Italy. Then she graduated at Cornell. And I got a first postdoc position between Arecibo and Max Planck Institute for Astrophysics in Göttingen. Then she moved to Swinburne University, right? I'm by heart. Swinburne University as a fellow at the Center for Astrophysics and Supercomputing. She finally got a junior fellow, then a senior fellow at University of Western Australia in Perth. And since 2020, she is a principal research fellow there at the International Center for Radio Astronomy Research. And that's it. Barbara, you have the 30 minutes. I invite people on your behalf to ask a question at any time, raise the hand, and eventually use the chat. Please do it. Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot, Carlo, for the introduction. Can you hear me well? Good. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk a bit about H1 surveys. So my plan today is to tell you a bit about extragalactic H1 surveys, focusing on global statistical measurements, and then share some early results from the Wallaby survey. Let me see if I can. Okay, so let me start with a few key facts to keep in mind when it comes to studying H1 in galaxies. First, neutral atomic hydrogen, or H1 for short, is detected via the 21 centimeter line, which is due to a fin split transition in the hyperfine structure levels of the ground state, electronic state of the atomic hydrogen. H1 is important because it's a dominant component of the interstellar medium in galaxies, and it's the reservoir out of which new stars are formed. Therefore, it is important, of course, if you want to understand how galaxies form and evolve, to know about their gas content. Being a spectral emission with the 21 centimeter line, we know not only the content of H1 in galaxies, but also its kinematics. And H1 is also an excellent tracer of environmental effects. So I know that Paolo Serra gave a talk a couple of weeks ago, I think, talking about these Formax cluster surveys. So you know already how powerful H1 is to study environmental effects. But this is exemplified also very well by the image on the top, where you see the M81 group. If you look at the optical image on the left, it looks like three galaxies that have nothing to do with each other. But when we put our H1 glasses, we see a very different picture. So these three galaxies are connected by complex network of filaments, which gives us a very different idea of what of this system in particular. And so you can also see how H1 observations are complementary to optical ones. Now, when it comes to comparing H1 observation and, say, optical and star formation properties, there are a couple of things to keep in mind. First, H1 is typically distributed in a much farther out than the stellar disk, typically 2-3 times more extended than the stellar disk. And this is shown in the image on the top, where you can see a nearby galaxy, and the stars are in purple, pinkish, and the H1 distribution is in bluish. So, and this is typical that the H1 is distributed much farther out from the center than the stars and the region where star formation is active. The second thing to keep in mind is that most H1 is actually not associated with star formation. So in the cartoon below, which shows H1 column density versus radius, you see that basically just some of the H1 is associated to the to star formation, which is the one at the highest column densities, but most of the H1 is actually at column densities of order of 20 or lower atoms per centimeter square. And so this is a H1 that is not participating in star formation. And the orange map shows the H1 contour of a nearby galaxy from the ELOGAS survey, which is a state of the art when it comes to deep imaging of nearby systems. And these reach a column density of order of 2 times 10 to the 19 per centimeter square, which is about the edge of the disk. Now, there are two basic ways of detecting H1 emission from galaxies. We can use single dish antennas like parks or a receiver on the top, and these instruments give us measurements of the global H1 content of galaxy. So the typical observation is a so-called double horn spectrum, the blue spectrum that you see up there. And basically, this tells us about the total H1 mass of the galaxy, its rotational velocity if we know the inclination to the line of sight, and the redshift. But it's like getting a one-pixel observation of a galaxy, so we don't know where the H1 is distributed. And these kind of observations are available for a few tens of thousands of galaxies, all at redshift less than 0.05. Or we can use interferometers. So we pretty much combine antennas together, and these enable us to actually map the H1 distribution in galaxies. So we get nice maps like the one shown pretty much in the middle of the slide that shows H1 contours overlaid on an optical image. And of course, this kind of information is much more powerful because we know the exact distribution of the gas and its kinematics. But it, of course, it's much more costly to obtain. And this is the reason why H1 maps to date have been obtained for less than 1,000 galaxies, all very nearby. By nearby, I mean typically distances less than 20 megaparsecs. Now, all of this is going to change dramatically with the Square Kilometer Array, of SK for short, and its pathfinders. In particular, the Wallaby survey, which I will talk about in the second part of my talk. And these instruments are going to increase those numbers by orders of magnitude and extend to higher redshift than possibly available, possibly feasible today. Now, most of the H1 data that we have from galaxies come from H1 blend surveys done with single dish telescopes. In particular, the IPAS survey, which was done with Parkes, and the AFALFA survey, which was done with Arecibo. Together, these two surveys cataloged almost 40,000 galaxies. So again, measuring only the global H1 content. And this, of course, is very powerful. It's, this gives us a complete census of the sky mapped by the surveys with which we can do statistical studies like measuring the H1 mass function and things like this. But we have to keep in mind that H1 blind surveys are strongly biased towards gas-rich star-forming systems within their volume. And this is demonstrated in the little histogram on the bottom right, which shows the NUV-Mansart distribution, color distribution for a stellar mass light example, and that's the black histogram. NUV-Mansart is a proxy for specific star formation rate or star formation rate per unit stellar mass. And there are two distinct peaks. The one on the left corresponds to the star forming sequence, and the one on the right corresponds to the red sequence of passive systems. And in green, you see an overlay, the subset of galaxies that are detected by AlphaAlpha. And as you can see, AlphaAlpha detects only the gas-rich galaxies on the star-forming sequence. Now, this means that H1 blend surveys are very well suited, at least when we use the H1 detections, to study processes that are typical of the H1-rich regime or the star-forming main sequence. But of course, this is a bit of a limitation when we want to understand galaxies, because in order to understand how galaxies form and evolve, how they stop forming stars, so the quenching processes, or also environmental effects that strip the gas, we need to be able to explore the gas pool regime and so go below the star forming main sequence. So in this little cartoon, I'm showing specific star formation rate over stellar mass, which is specific star formation rate versus stellar mass. And the blue region is the star forming sequence, and the big red bubble is the red sequence of, you know, or the red cloud of passing systems. And actually, exploring what happens in the gas flow regime has been a very interest of mine in the past several years. And this is also the main motivation behind the design of the X-GAS survey. Briefly, X-GAS, which stands for the Extended Galaxy Arecibo SDSS Survey, is a combination of two large programs done with Arecibo, which measured the H1 content, global H1 content, of about 1,200 galaxies. These galaxies were selected only by stellar mass larger than 10 to the 9 and redshift smaller than 0.05. So 200 megaparsecs pretty much. And what is unique about this survey is that it was gas fraction limited, meaning that I observed the galaxies until I detected H1 or until I reached a low limiting gas fraction of order of a few percent. By gas fraction, I refer to the ratio between H1 mass and stellar mass, even though this is not exactly a fraction. And now you can see the version of the cartoon that I showed in the previous slide with the real data. So specific star formation rate versus stellar mass. And you can see in the blue dots are the galaxies that were detected with Arecibo. And the empty black circles are galaxies that were observed but not detected, for which we were able to compute upper limits. And the blue band is the star forming sequence. So as I said, this survey was designed to probe galaxies below the star forming sequence. And as you can see, we detect galaxies all the way to the red cloud. All these data are available at the website that is shown above if you're interested. Now, here I'm going to show just a few examples of the science that we did with X-GAS. And something particularly important that we did was to quantify H1 gas scaling relations. So here I'm showing gas fraction, again, H1 mass over stellar mass, plotted versus stellar mass on the left, stellar surface density in the middle, and specific star formation rate on the right. In all these plots, the small gray circles are detections, H1 detections, the dark arrows are upper limits, and the big red symbols are running medians. So as you can see very easily, these plots show that there are clear relations between all these quantities, but the relation between gas fraction and stellar mass has a lot of scatter. While, for instance, the one with specific star formation rate is tighter. The relation with stellar surface density is interesting because that is a proxy for morphology. So we find that disk-dominated systems at low value of mu star and bulge-dominated systems on the right-hand side. And as you can see, there is a kind of a decent relation up to a stellar surface density of order of 10 to the 8.5, which is the disk regime, and then the scatter explodes when you go at higher values. The tightest correlation is with NUV-R, which is not shown, but probes unobscured star formation. And these relations are interesting because they provide a reference benchmark against which we can compare studies at higher redshift or from different surveys. And they provide strong constraints for galaxy evolution models. Now, another way of probing the gas flow regime is to use a spectral stacking with the H1 blind surveys. So this is really a powerful technique that allows us really to exploit H1 blind surveys way below their sensitivity limits. And so the way it works is that you need an optically selected sample for which has spectroscopic redshifts. Then you go into an H1 data cube, which is shown schematically on the left. And so you extract a spectrum at the position of your galaxy. And sometimes the spectrum corresponds to detection, like the one in the green box, more often to a non-detection, like the galaxy in the red box. So what we can do is to use the spectroscopic redshift to compute the recessional velocity, subtract this from the spectrum, so basically align all the spectra and frequency, and coalesce them. And when we do so, and this is exemplified by the little movie that is running on the slide, what happens is that we decrease the noise and we get a detection which tells us about what is the average gas content of the sample that was coalesced. And this is going to be a key technique, especially also for the SKA surveys. Now, with this, we can actually exploit H-unbound surveys like alfalfa to do something that we cannot do now with targeted surveys like XGAS that lack statistics. So this is work that was done by my former PhD students in Swinburne, now in Canada. So basically, he cross-matched alfalfa with the Sloan Digital Sky Survey and selected a sample of 25,000 galaxies based on stellar mass and redshift only. And the vast majority of these galaxies are not detected by alfalfa, but there is a spectrum. And so what he did was to co-add galaxies, divide galaxies in beams according to different properties, co-add and measure the average signal. So if we start with the plot on the left, this is again gas fraction versus stellar mass, where galaxies are beamed by stellar mass and any luminous arc color. And so each point, each of these color points in the slide correspond to having co-added hundreds to thousands of galaxies. And so the three beams were chosen to reproduce roughly the blue sequence, the star forming sequence in blue, the green valley in green, and the red sequence in red. And the black line is the relation that we find that we find for the full sample. The little gray dots are the subset, is the subset of galaxies detected by alfalfa. So as I said, only the most gas-rich subset. And so it's very interesting because the relation with stellar mass, so the black line, is kind of steep. But when you beam also by color, you find three parallel relations which are much less steep. Of course, we can also do the opposite game. So study gas fractions versus NV mass or color and divide by stellar mass beams. And this is on the right. And if we do so, we find that the relations are much closer to each other and they're pretty much the same slope as the relation for the full sample. So this already tells me that the gas content cares more about NV mass or specific star formation rate than of stellar mass. But this also helps us understanding why the gas fraction stellar mass relation has not only such a large scatter, but such a steep slope. And so this is the same plot that I showed in the previous slide, the same NV-R beams, but now I'm also showing on the bottom the number of galaxies that were co-added in each beam. And so you can see that when we are looking at the low stellar mass end, we are dominated in numbers by galaxies that are gas-rich and on the star-forming sequence. So these are the numbers circled in blue. When we go towards high stellar masses, we are dominated in numbers by galaxies that are passive and gas-poor. And so we will combine all these population together, we get the steep relation that we know. And so basically, the gas fraction stellar mass relation is just a consequence of galaxy bimodality. It has a huge scatter because we're combining galaxies with very different star formation rate, and people should never use stellar mass to predict H1 content. Another area where stacking has been incredibly useful is to study environmental effects. So this is again a work by Toby Brown, but focused on the subset of 11,000 satellite galaxies in the previous sample. So what we did here was to look again at the gas fraction stellar mass relation on the left side, but this time beaming by halo mass. And so the halo mass beams correspond pretty much to galaxies in pairs, in blue, then increasing halo masses towards the bottom until reaching the red line, which corresponds to pretty much clusters. So halo masses 10 to the 14th and 10 to the 15th. And so what we see here is that there is a gradual decrease of gas content, a fixed stellar mass, with increasing group halo mass. And there is no clear threshold, so there is not a clear jump between these halo mass beams. More interestingly, since I told you that gas cares about star formation rate and not stellar mass, we looked at the gas fraction versus specific star formation rate on the right, same halo mass beams. And what we can see is that there is a reduction of gas fraction, also a fixed specific star formation rate. And now this becomes very interesting because this tells me that each one must be removed faster than star formation is squashed. Otherwise, I wouldn't see a separation of fixed stellar mass that I see in this plot. And so basically, these are the most stringent, this is the, I guess, the most convincing evidence of cold gas stripping also in the group environment, and it comes from spectral stacking and taking advantage of the fact that we could use 10,000 galaxies to do this. Now, I don't know if there are any questions so far. Otherwise, I just gave you an overview of a current H1 surveys and talked a bit about the limitations. Now I'm going to tell you a bit about the next generation H1 blind surveys, in particular the Wallaby survey. So Wallaby is done with ASCAP, the Australian Escape Pathfinder, which is a 6 kilometer interferometer that is located in a very radio quiet site in Western Australia. So this interferometer includes 36 antennas with a diameter of 12 meters each. And this is a fantastic survey machine because these antennas are equipped with receivers that allow an instantaneous field of view of 30 square degrees. And so this makes it very easy to scan the sky very, very fast, very effectively. And so Wallaby, which stands for Wide Field ASCAP L-Band Legacy All Sky Blind Survey, is the H1 blind survey with ASCAP, so the shallow All Sky survey. This survey is designed to cover 3/4 of the sky up to declinations of 30 degrees and up to a redshift of 0.26. As I said, we have a field of view of 30 square degrees instantaneously. The spatial resolution is 30 seconds. And we integrate about 8 hour turn pointing, which means that gives a sensitivity pretty much comparable to alpha alpha, just to give you a point of reference. And this survey is going to be a game changer because it's going to provide us with very unprecedented statistics. As I told you, we have measured the global H1 content for 40,000 galaxies. Wallaby will measure this for 600,000 galaxies, so over 500,000, and up to much higher redshift. And we'll also provide about 5,000 well-resolved maps. By well-resolved, we mean larger than 5 beams in the sky. And the fantastic image that I'm showing on the bottom right is actually a Wallaby observation of a nearby galaxy, where you see optical image with the H1 contour superimposed. Now, I just wanted to give you to show you some highlights from Wallaby. And first, let me clarify a bit the timeline and what we did so far. So Wallaby Early Science started in October 2016 with a very limited array. We started with the so-called ASCAP 12, so only 12 antennas in place and not full bandwidth. But we observed long enough to reach full Wallaby sensitivity. And we observed the 4 fields pretty much covering galaxy groups. And these observations took 700 hours. Then in mid-2019, we did pre-pilot observations of the Eridanus supercluster. At this point, we had already 28 antennas and almost full bandwidth. And the real full array and bandwidth observation started last year in May. So this is called the pilot survey phase 1. And we targeted 3 fields. So Hydra cluster, Norma cluster, and the NGC 4636 group. And now we're currently planning for a survey phase two, which is going to start soon and will take the next several months. And I will show you what kind of fields we're planning to observe in a few minutes. If you are interested in having more detail about Wallaby, there is a survey paper by Barbara Kolibowski that was published last year, and the survey website is noted down on the slide. Now, to show you some data, let's start with Wallaby early signs. As I said, we targeted four fields, which are shown by those magenta footprints. And I'm showing here a couple of galaxies, as usual, H1 contours overlaid on an optical image. And this is work that was led by PhD students. So as I said, 700 hours of observations and more over 200 terabytes of data. Then next, we move to the pre-pilot service with the Eridanus supergroup. And this is a paper in preparation by Beeching 4, focusing on these observations. You can see on the left a nice moment zero map of the region where you can see galaxies, the H1 distribution of the galaxies, different colors, according to the structure that they belong to. Three galaxies are shown on the bottom to give you an example of quality of the data. And on the left, again, our usual gas fraction stellar mass plot. And please don't pay attention to those red and blue crosses, but just notice that the orange circles are detections in the Eridanus supergroup. And for comparison, the gray dots are galaxies in X-gas. So what we see is that Eridanus is a very gas poor environment. So that's, as I said, this is work in progress. Then moving to pilot phase one with the full array, this is an astonishing image of the Hydra of the other cluster, supercluster. So this image shows 60 square degrees field. And each color field that you see here is an H1 map. So overall, it's almost 300 H1 detections. And as if you think, that so far, before Wallaby, we collected H1 maps for about 500 galaxies, this is in one go already a comparable number of H1 maps. And the quality of this data is really fantastic. So I'm just zooming in on a region to show you the detail of some of this detection. So really an incredible amount, wealth of data and lots of work to do to analyze this beautiful data set. Then there are a few papers in preparation using this Hydra data. So this is again work by Tristan Reynolds, who's now a postdoc here at ICRAR. And so this shows a part of the Hydra field on the left, that gray image. The dashed black line is the virial radius of the cluster. And you can see the H1 maps in red and blue. And there is a galaxy highlighted with an orange circle around. This is a galaxy that is discussed in detail in this paper. You can see in the bottom the five well-resolved galaxies in this field, so with larger than five beams, and in particular, and their positions in the phase space diagram on the top. And yeah, this paper is particularly concerned with one of these galaxies, which is the second among the images in the bottom, which is at the edge of the cluster, but still is consistent with ground pressure stripping. Now, moving to plans for the Wallaby phase two. You can see this kind of a busy image, courtesy by Carolyn Waddell. And so you can see here in cyan, the NGC 4636 group, which was already observed in phase one. And the proposed field are the those green ones. So basically, there are four contiguous fields near the Virgo South extension, and then there is a field on the north, NGC 4808, which is above definition zero, so has plenty of multivalent data, in particular from SDSS. And all those stars are continuum sources color-coded by intensity, and these are things that we are trying to stay away from, at least in this at this stage of the survey. Because we are very interested in testing our pipelines and see how fast we can process data, and continuum sources create lots of headaches. Okay, so I talked about a wallaby and the Australian escape pathfinder. Of course, there is another pathfinder in South Africa, Meerkat, which you already heard about from Paulo Serra. So this is 64 antennas with a bit larger diameter, and these two instruments are very complementary to each other. So ASCAP, as I said, is a survey machine. Meerkat is designed to go much deeper. It's much more sensitive. And with these two instruments, we're planning a suite of H1 surveys that will really transform this field. And so basically, the cartoon shows you some of these surveys. So Wallaby, which is at pressure zero, so it's at the lower edge of the shallowness. Then the Dingo deep and ultra-deep surveys are also surveys planned with ASCAP, which will cover much smaller areas in the sky going much deeper. And the LADUMA survey with Meerkat, which is expected to detect galaxies all the way up to redshift 1. So that will take, to give you an idea, about several thousand hours with Meerkat focused on the same field. Okay, and these are my take-home messages. So of course, Colgas, in particular H1, is key to understand galaxy formation and evolution. I gave a brief overview of current H1 samples and discussed the limitation when it comes to statistics and redshift. We don't go very far with H1 detections. And also H1 main surveys provided most of the data so far, but sample preferentially gas-rich systems. So we started exploring the gas pool regime with deep targeted observations, so the X-gas survey, but also with spectra stacking. And as I said, Wallaby is already producing exciting results, and the next generation H1 survey is also with Meerkat will be a game changer for this field. And I'm happy to take questions. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Barbara.
I went over time, I guess.
No, this one's fine. It's fine. We started late and a bit later, so it's fine. Any question or comment?
I have one question. Yeah. Barbara, what is the mean sensitivity in terms of RMS of Wallabies? 1.5 millijansky, something like that?
Something of that order, 1.6 millijansky, I think.
Okay, thank you.
It's comparable, yeah, with alpha, as I said, just to give you an idea of the depth.
Alpha is
2.3.
It's 2.2. Yeah. With a spectral resolution of 10 kilometers per second, I guess.
No, it's 4, more 4.
Yeah, so it's four. And then you have an angular resolution, which is 30 arc seconds.
30 arc seconds, yeah.
Will the data product be publicly available, or
So all the data are publicly available. So all the data that we took so far are already publicly available on CASDA, which is the CSIRO ASCAP Science Data Archive. But you will find only the raw data cubes. So of course, we are producing value-added data, so moment zero map, moment H1 maps, catalogs, and kinematic models, and so on. So if you are interested in using Wallaby data, I strongly suggest you to join the survey. So if you go to the Wallaby website, under, I think, team, you can actually, there is a form to fill in to join the survey, so you can actually benefit from the experience also. Sure. Well, you can access all the value-added product, but also, yeah, we have busy weeks when we show how to use the data, you know, science workshops and work, you know, also. People, you can be more aware of issues with the data and everything.
Is it a huge collaboration?
It's pretty big, Dana, as you know, in any collaboration.
What do you mean by pretty big?
I think over 100. I can.
Okay.
Let me see.
Be reasonable. Okay.
It's not. Let me see if I can actually find.
Okay. Yeah.
The website. Over, anyway.
Over experiences in my mind goes to the Euclid collaboration where the more than a thousand. Okay, so 100. And also, I have a question not related to your product. Do you know whether with the Wallaby, I suppose yes, there will be a plan to perform a peculiar velocity survey?
Yeah. So Wallaby is divided in several working groups. So there is a group interested in the very local universe, also peculiar velocities and things like that. Then there is like a local universe where we are more interested in nearby galaxies, but yeah.
The Taipan survey driven by an Australian collaboration also performed in optical wave bands from a peculiar velocity survey going up to a shift to 0.115 maybe, but with radio can go a bit farther away. So I was wondering.
Yeah, except that Taipan unfortunately is not going ahead. So yeah, that was an unfortunate thing.
Okay.
But yeah, we have I guess you can use there are people, I think, like Jeremy Mold that are part of the survey and particularly interested in peculiar velocities, cosmic flows and stuff.
Yeah. Thank
you. Barbara, I have another question. Do you have an idea when the survey will be completed? Is there a sort of time schedule which is trustable in some way or?
So we should start the full survey at the end of this year, early 2022. And then it will take a few years. So we are also exploring commensality because there is a galactic survey, there are transient surveys, all sorts of other surveys with ASCAP. And so it depends also on how commensal will manage to be.
I see a raised hand by Katarina.
About a few years, yeah.
Yes, thank you very much for a very interesting and nice talk. I would like to ask a question related to the future plans with the Wallaby data with respect to the large-scale structure environment. So typically, we talk about the environment and we think about the local environment, namely the clusters where this gas stripping is very important. But is there any plan to perform a similar kind of studies and cross-correlate the data, H1 data of galaxies with the large-scale environment? I'm thinking about, for example, cosmic filaments and this kind of studies.
Absolutely, yes. So, of course, in the southern sky, multivariate data are not as good and readily available as in the northern sky, so we don't have Sloan with all the spectroscopic redshift and group catalogs ready. Mm-hmm. But there are also regions, for instance, that are have a fantastic group catalogs like the gamma regions. And this is actually where DINGO is going to be done. Okay. DINGO is focused on gamma fields because the science with DINGO is mostly based on stacking, and so you want to have lots of spectroscopic redshifts. But there is the 6DF survey that is, that is available, and there's plenty of redshifts. And for the Wallaby depth, it's probably good enough. So, and yeah, then pan-STARRS imaging. And so the idea, of course, is to, it's very clear to everybody that you cannot do science using only H1. You absolutely need the multivariate data. So cross-matching with optical imaging and UV infrared surveys and having a good group catalog is absolutely essential. So absolutely, many of us are very interested in that.
Sure, many thanks.
Sure.
Any other question or comment? If not, I'd like to thank you, Barbara, again. Invite people who wish to stay to chat with Barbara to stay online. And I'll see you next week with a Cafe Club by Alessandro Sommerfeld on strong lensing. Bye-bye, everybody.